IBM has been selling IT and services to the government longer than just about anyone. It started in the 1890s with punch card tabulators for the decennial census. Well, things have changed. In this final day of our special series, Inside the World's Biggest Buyer, we turn to that contractor point of view. Joining us is the man responsible for the 21st century IBM in the federal market, Todd Ramsey. Mr. Ramsey, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Tom.
So IBM is the original IT contractor to the federal government. Now, you've been there for, well, not quite half of IBM's federal life. So what's different now, not so much relative to 1890, but how have things changed in the last, say, 10 years in the way the government goes about acquisition?
I don't think I'm quite as old as you put me out to be there, Tom, but if I were to describe the federal acquisition environment over the 25 years or so that I've been involved in it, I would probably choose a pendulum. And on one end of the pendulum, I would probably put the word outcomes, and the other end of the pendulum, I would put the word process. And what I've seen is the process kind of ebb and flow between those two extremes. I think we've been at our best in the federal community when the industry, the contractors, and the government have been united in an outcome. You know, you saw it in the 60s when we were putting a man on the moon. I think you saw it again at the reaction to 9/11. There was a passion about delivering the outcomes, a sense of urgency about getting things done, and we joined in a partnership and really accomplished a lot of great outcomes in those times. There are other times, and sometimes it's the result of problems that occurred in those good times, that we have become very focused on process. And I think that's where we are now. And sometimes that focus on process becomes the end itself. Instead of procurement being a means for the businesses to acquire the solutions they need in a fair and open way, we focus only on whether the outcome of the process worked well or not. And what I see today is that we have intense oversight. And oversight by itself is not bad. It's actually a good thing, but as an adage I often use is too much of a good thing is a bad thing. There is so much oversight, kind of review of the reviewers of the reviewers of the reviewers, that progress has really ground to a halt in many situations. There are more checkers and gatekeepers than there are people doing things. We celebrate people who find problems, who stop programs, more than we do those that are producing results. So I think it's time, and this has happened in the past, when people are frustrated like they are today, we see that pendulum move back. So I think it's time to move back more towards an outcome orientation.
So let's put today's economy and the financial picture the government is facing into this pendulum that you've described. How, especially with threat of sequestration, but it cuts it in any rate at programs, how do you think that's going to swing? Is it going to keep it towards progress, or are people actually going to start talking about outcomes?
Well, as I said just a minute ago, I think we've found that when there's high frustration about trying to get things done, and you kind of go in these cycles, I call it, where you try to fix a problem and you create more problems or whatever. We had a period like this in the early 90s, and I think we came together as government industry that we needed to do better. Steve Kelman was the facilitator of that. He did an outstanding job of bringing together government industry on how we could do things better, how we could join towards the outcomes. And I see the beginnings of that today in the industry associations and things that are there. So I think we'll start to see some of that happen naturally here over the next few years.
Now, over the last couple of years, several years, I guess, the shift, there's been a shift in what the government buys. So now more contract actions, and I believe more dollars, are for services than they are for discrete products. And as a company that sells both, how has that affected large contractors, the shift towards services?
Well, I think we've always had a strong services business here in the federal marketplace. I guess I don't know the total statistics off the top of my head, but I'd be surprised if there were more products sold than services if you include integration services that we do around here. So the traditional giving an application where you hire somebody to do the integration, writing the application or whatever, has always been a strong component. What I think we're beginning to see is a shift from products to services that look like products. So this is what cloud, this is software as a services, this is managed services, which have been used much more heavily in other governments, certainly in the commercial companies around the world, than they have been here. So I think we're beginning to see that. But the key to making that successful is to understand the business model that makes that work, and that is that these are all standardized services. So in essence, the client needs to change their processes and use the services as they're offered, as opposed to what we're used to in the federal marketplace of giving detailed specifications, not only what the service should look like, but how you provide that service. That standardized services gives you an economy of scale that lets you lower the cost of the offering, and it also allows you to begin to automate. That's what cloud is all about, is automating the provisioning and other things so that you can become even more efficient over time. And you spread the cost of enhancing that service across a bunch of users instead of just one. When you specify that you want things done in a very particular way, you become a custom owner of that, and you have to own the cost to enhance and maintain that over time.
So what does that mean for IBM? What are you doing internally? Are you hiring different people? Or is your business plan different when you're talking about the federal market because of this change?
No, I think we are in a unique position here in the sense that we are actually offering product stacks that provide services in a way that we have not done before. You've purchased, I think it's $35 billion or so, 120 companies, and we've built these product stacks around things like security. So we have ways of delivering a fully integrated security offering for clients. The one that's probably the hottest for us right now is the analytics, the ability to manage big data, analyze this big data, both structured and unstructured, and deliver things. So we can deliver that both as a service and as a product. So it's up to the customer how they want to buy it. It's a matter of whether you want to invest the capital to do it yourself or you want to buy that service over time. So because of the product offerings we have, it's fairly easy for us to convert that into a service if that's what the client wants to do. And you can literally acquire solutions in a much more efficient and effective pattern by using this thing. So, for instance, in the analytics, we can analyze the social media. We can bring in available information into kind of a map mashup or whatever. We've created integrated operating centers overnight for people like the FBI for monitoring special events that bring all that stuff together. So there's new and creative ways you can solve problems using these things. And again, we can offer that as both a service and a product.
We're speaking with Todd Ramsey. He's general manager for U.S. Federal at IBM. And what about the emphasis from OMB on firm fixed prices for contracted services? Has that made it tougher on contractors?
Well, I think, firm fixed price has been around a long time, so it's not something new. I think there are times when firm fixed price makes sense, and there are times when it doesn't make sense. When you have clear, defined requirements that are not going to change, and generally if you have a relatively short period of time you're talking about, I think firm fixed price makes a lot of sense. But when you have environments, and this characterizes more of what we do rather than less, where requirements are changing or you're not quite sure what you want to do, it's almost impossible to do something for firm fixed price and have that be a success for both the for government and the provider. So I think we probably tend to overuse that. We tend to kind of find a new idea and apply it to everything. Where it's applied, where it belongs, it works very well. But where you apply it to a more complex problem, you don't know what the answer is going to be. I think it's very hard for that to be a successful model.
And for your people that are sitting across the table from contracting officers and program managers, people involved with the requirements, in the last couple of years, do you think, is it apparent one way or the other whether the government has the skills in the people that are doing that type of work to get the best deal and also the best acquisition methodology for the government?
Well, I think the challenge we have right now, and I think this kind of accompanies when we have more of a process rather than an outcome focus, is that the practices today, and this is not the laws, this is just the practices, limit communication. It's very hard for executives, they're actually instructed in many cases, not to meet with contractors. We're seeing a reduction in the number of people that actually attend conferences, which are kind of a many-on-many environment to do things. And communication, I think, is vital to success in delivering these outcomes because, if you're in the government, you don't understand all the things that are happening in the industry in terms of technology, and you need ongoing dialogues. Question and answers, not stilted conversations, where you find out about what's happening and you kind of get a sense for the art of the possible and what makes sense and how to make the trade-offs before you write the requirements. Likewise, industry, you know, meeting with the clients, understanding their real business needs, what their pain points are, makes it better. You're better able to provide innovative ideas or new suggestions or think about different ways of solving the problem. In many cases, we've resorted to, you know, writing everything down on one side, sending it over a barrier, writing a result on the other side, and that lack of communication, I think, is the cause of many of the problems we have in the programs today.
Now, the government has launched its MythBusters campaign and has done a couple of versions of busting myths so far. Has that helped at all in terms of the communication, and what myths are, or perhaps what confusion is still out there, do you think?
Well, I would say actions speak louder than words, and I think the MythBusters campaign was well-conceived, well-intended, well-written. I mean, it really reflects the fact that the issue is not the laws, the FARs and other things, but the practices we're using today. And I think, in reality, it has not changed much, you know. I'll give you the most recent example I have of that. I was on a call this week where someone read a memo. I assume it's correct here, read a memo that was sent to one of the agency personnel here in Washington that basically said if a contractor requests a meeting, you should ask a series of questions, one of which, are they intending to bid on any RFP in the near future, or do they want any information about the RFP? If the answer is yes, you should not meet with the contractor. And I think it's those types of things that are being implemented that make the MythBusters campaign, you know, not as effective as they intended.